Rico.
And I'm Jessica.
And this is the Always the Critic podcast, where a couple of friends review the latest movies, except we literally have zero qualifications to do so. Jessica, this is the start of a big week.
It is the start of a big week. We have multiple movies that we're seeing next, and this was high on our list of anticipated movies for this year. Mm-hmm. And we watched it all together with a bunch of friends in IMAX last week. So here we're doing it. We're finally doing here.
We're doing it. And I'm really excited to talk about it. Before we get started on talking about it, if this is your first time listening, go ahead and subscribe to your favorite podcast app. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many more. And if you like us, go ahead and give us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. 5 stars goes a long way for us.
Come and check us out on social media to stay up to date on our latest episodes and reviews. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at Always Critic Pod. And lastly, if you are a fan, please consider becoming a patron. It's a great way for you to get involved and show your support. You can check out the page on patreon.com/alwayscriticpod. And thank you to our patrons, Curtis, Bale, Cindy, CD, Alana, Grace, Lorna Lee, Sammy, and Caitlin.
Thank you so much for being Patreon subscribers. You can join them for as little as $2 a month. Help support the show. Now, you were going to say something?
Oh, did it look like I was going to say
something? It did
look
like you were going to say something.
Well, I guess we should bring up a little bit of an elephant in the room, which is that the WGA and SAG are both on strike, which is something that hasn't happened in, for both of them to strike at the same time, like 60-something years.
Yeah.
It's really historic. And as a podcast, we did not discuss me talking about this before we came on to talk Mission Impossible. But we stand in solidarity, obviously, with the strikers. Easily. We want them to all creatives to be paid fairly for their work. And looking at the numbers of what the studio executives are making per year versus what the average actor or writer is making, and the way that the streamers just don't want to pay anybody any residuals or royalties, unlike how it has always been on television, is wild. And we hope that this gets resolved really soon. Now, that being said, we're not part of either guild, either union. So, and we are not, we never receive payment for any review that we do. And if we get free tickets or anything, like we did for the Past Lives A24 movie a few weeks ago, we say it up front.
Yes.
So for sure. Just to be clear, this is not to promote the movie in any official capacity.
Right.
We would have reviewed this movie regardless.
Right. We were going to review this movie. This was one of my most anticipated movies of the year. And I know that certain content creators got into some hot water.
Yeah.
About how they were approaching the situation regarding the strike from both the WGA and
SAG.
SAG. It can't be taken lightly. It can't be, because this is the livelihood. I think a lot of people, when they think of Hollywood, and I'm talking about just the average moviegoer, you know, the names like Tom Cruise, Margot Robbie, those are the names that come to mind. But you got to be thinking about all the people who act in a movie, who this is their livelihood and this is what they do to earn a living and to be able to afford housing and to be able to afford, you know, being able to pay for everything. And one big stat is, if I'm not mistaken, in order to qualify for the health insurance that SAG has, they need to earn $26,000 a year. And over 80% of people in the SAG do not qualify for that. So that is a huge, huge number. So obviously this should not be taken lightly. This is something that we stand for. And yes, we get all of our enjoyment, you know, in talking about movies, talking about, you know, the things that are coming and being able to praise the work of these people like writers and actors. But at the same time, we're not going to sit here and, you know, say like, oh, we demand that they just get back to work already. No, it needs to be fair for them. It really does. So that is a good point to bring up, especially with everything happening right now on strike, in Hollywood. So thank you for bringing that up. Really appreciate that. So we will transition from that into our review today. Today we are talking about the latest movie in this installment in this franchise. That is Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. Jessica, what is this movie about?
The IMDb synopsis reads, Ethan Hunt and his IMF team must track down a dangerous weapon before it falls into the wrong hands.
So is this that can easily Mission be. Impossible 3, Mission Impossible 4?
Yeah, this basically is the synopsis for every single Mission Impossible movie.
It truly is. It truly is. This movie is directed by Christopher McQuarrie. This is his third go around on the Mission Impossible. So he's done three in a row now. He was also a writer along with Bruce Geller and Eric Gendrisson. I hope I pronounced that right. And the movie stars Tom Cruise, of course, Haley Atwell, Ving Rhames, Simon Pegg, Rebecca Ferguson, Vanessa Kirby, Esai Morales, Palm Clementife, Henry Cerny, Shea Whigham, Greg Tarzan Davis, Frederick Schmidt, Mariela Garriga, and Carrie Elwes. So, what a cast.
Yeah.
What a cast. So, Jessica, how did it do at the box office? This is an interesting thing.
It's made $80 million domestic since opening and $235 million worldwide.
The numbers don't sound bad, but this movie opened up on a Wednesday, not even on a Friday. So it had a two-day bump, and it still hasn't even made $100 million domestically.
Ouch.
That's kind of a sign of worry, and especially because the critics score is 96%. And the audience score is 94%. So this movie is being praised.
Right.
So what's going on? What's why are people not going to see this movie? Well, and I say that relatively because of the fact that a movie of this caliber, of this size, usually would be trying to premiere north of $100 million in its opening weekend. And even with a five-day run, it still hasn't even gotten there. So what do you think is causing something like that? Do you think maybe...
I have no idea.
Yeah, exactly.
No, because there have been big numbers this year for sure. Like for Fast X, those are stupid numbers that were coming back. And I don't think that maybe people are willing to shell out money to see Tom Cruise be Tom Cruise anymore. Mm. Is it fatigue of the Mission Impossible brand? I don't know.
I don't know, because it's coming off of such a high that was Fallout and probably its most praised movie when it comes to Mission Impossible. Plus, Tom Cruise, you know, almost single-handedly saved the box office last summer
right.
with Top Gun Maverick.
Right, right.
You know, so it's a weird one. It's a weird, like, kind of conundrum. Like, hey,
I don't know.
One of the biggest movie stars in the world, coming off of one of the biggest financial successes in the world ever, just releases a movie and it's kind of light. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. But we're not here to mince about like the box office and stuff. What we are here to talk about is what we thought. But the critics, their consensus, with world-threatening stakes and epic set pieces to match that massive title, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 proves this is still a franchise you should choose to accept. Aha, there it is.
Always.
All right. So, Jessica, what are your thoughts on Dead Reckoning Part 1?
It was pretty good. It was very watchable. Extra long, 2 hours, 45 minutes. I felt it a little bit. My parents saw it and my dad was, we warned them ahead of time. Yo, it's a long movie, 2 hours and 45 minutes. Make sure that you go to the bathroom beforehand and make sure you're not like chugging soda throughout the movie because you're not going to make it. My dad couldn't make it.
So he had to
get up and use a bathroom. They didn't feel the 2 hours and 45 minutes that much. They were like, it went by fast. And I was like, oh, great. So maybe it was just me.
Maybe it was just you. I would say that the movie does have its moments where it does feel a little bit long. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes from there's a lot of heavy exposition in this movie.
Yo.
That's one flaw in this movie that I will say is that there are exposition dumps.
Yeah. Because they're retconning a character into Ethan Hunt's life. We've never seen this guy before. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's like manufactured devilry because of course he comes up, I don't know how many Mission Impossible movies later. Not a whiff of like this woman that was lost and meant a lot to Ethan Hunt that drove him to the life of espionage. I don't know why they thought this would necessarily work, but you know, keep the money going, I guess. Yeah. Gotta keep it flowing.
I think I love a lot of the set pieces in this movie. I think they are great, you know, great stunt choreography, great stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I just think that there's a bit of an issue where, and you'll feel it in the beginning of the movie, especially like after we get our first opening piece, we get like a huge exposition dump in a CIA office. And that scene, like, it drags. But with that said, I like the additions of Hayley Atwell.
Oh, yeah, she's great.
Pom Clementife.
Yeah, loved her.
She was
loved
great.
Yeah.
Asai Morales, there's still more to see from him because, again, this is part one. It's not a complete story. And the movie, I would say, has a little bit of a more a definite like conclusion to its own chapter than something like Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, where it leaves you on a true cliffhanger. This one doesn't quite, it kind of resolves, but it still shows you what's to come, but not quite as a cliffhanger, if I were to kind of break it down.
Yes, it has a nice resolution, but you know there's more to the story.
Right, you know there's more to the story. So you can leave with, you know, a bit of on a high note, like, hey, you know, we got a good story, we got a good resolution, but still have something to look forward to. And so I do like those additions. Obviously, everybody's back. There is one character, we'll talk in spoilers, what happens to this character that I was a little upset by. And I was like,
I'm not that upset. And I'll tell you why in spoilers.
I know. We'll talk about
it. You know
why.
That. We talked about it after the
Yeah, movie. We did. But we'll talk about it here as well. And here's one thing that I will say. There was so much marketing about the movie.
Oh, yeah. You know, maybe that's why the movie didn't do that well, is because they went apeshit on the marketing campaign. And it seemed like they were doing everything they could.
Breaking down the stunts
and behind the scenes. And here's Tom Cruise, and he flew to four different places to try and get as much promotion and whatever in before the strike and all this stuff. So was it too much?
Who knows?
Were people just kind of off put by the amount of Mission Impossible they were seeing in the lead up to the release?
Probably not that, but I will say the fact that they were constantly showing that same stunt.
Him,
you know, motorcycle off of the cliff.
Right.
And also then before the movie came out, they were like breaking down the train sequence and everything. I honestly feel like those things should be left for after the movie comes out to get people to be a little more astonished with, oh, that's how they did it, you know?
Yeah, they were kind of releasing the behind the scenes stuff prematurely.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't know that all of, like, take John Wick 4, for instance. Like, we didn't know everything about John Wick 4 and the stunts before we saw the movie. We saw a lot of that stuff after the movie was released. And I think that made it more impressive and maybe made people want to see it again, or people that missed it on its theatrical run finally want to see it when it comes on streaming.
Yeah.
So they didn't take that approach.
No,
for Mission Impossible.
They didn't. They were like, this is here's what everything we did and how we did it. Like,
yeah.
So that might be a little bit of like, okay, I get it. You drove a dirt bike off a cliff, you know? Now, that wasn't going to stop people from going to the movies, but I think it might have slowed down, you know, some people from being like, eh, I could catch it a little later. Like, they don't have to, they don't feel like they have to rush out and
the urgency.
Like, oh, I need to watch this new Mission Impossible movie.
Right.
So that's probably what it is. So anything else you want to talk about before we hit spoilers? Because I think there's a lot in spoilers that we can really touch on.
I think the thing that I like most about Mission Impossible at this point is not Ethan Hunt's character. Mm-hmm. It's all the lady characters who are kick-ass.
This franchise secretly is a vehicle for empowering women into powerful roles.
Yeah.
Yeah, like if you look at part 3, the one with Philip Seymour Hoffman, like they started introducing it with Carrie Russell's character.
Yes.
Like she has her moments, you know, before she's killed off. In Ghost Protocol, Paula Patton has an entire sequence where she is, you know, the driving force of a mission. Mm-hmm. And she's very integral. Then you get introduced to Ilsa Faust in Rogue Nation, and she's been there since. Even the villains, Vanessa Kirby's The White Widow, is such a strong character.
She's so memorable.
She is memorable, exactly. And so the ladies have been very memorable ever since they've been introduced. And I think it's like starting with part 3 on, is that they've been very memorable. And Hayley Atwell is no exception to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
She is incredible. She fits right into this franchise. So great job on them, you know, to really put women at the forefront because they deserve it. Okay. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to talk spoilers for Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 right after this.
The greatest trick.
Houston, we have a problem.
I am your father.
I see dead people.
The devil ever pulled.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Was convincing the world.
You can't handle the truth.
He didn't exist.
Oh, what's in the box?
All right, let's go ahead and let's talk spoilers for Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. All right. If we start at the very beginning, the MacGuffin. The MacGuffin of the movie is, it's a little out there. I was not expecting Eagle Eye.
You saw Eagle Eye, right?
Yes, with Shia LaBeouf and
Monaghan?
Yeah, Michelle Monaghan.
Yeah. Who was also in Mission Impossible 3. She was his wife.
Exactly. But yeah, Eagle Eye. Wow. I did not expect an Eagle Eye reference.
Yeah, well, it's basically the same thing, an AI gone rogue.
It's
trying to self-preserve and also annihilate at the same time.
Yeah. And
annihilate
so,
humans or whatever.
And it's afraid of one thing.
Yeah.
And that one thing is Ethan Hunt.
You know, I also thought about War Games
with
Matthew Broderick.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good comparison.
Yeah.
Where the computer becomes self-autonomous and...
and starts playing war games with actual nations.
Yeah. So it's a weird MacGuffin. I think they spend too much time of like going over it in
I love the name they gave for it, though.
The entity.
I wish it was an actual name.
What, like?
Like an acronym that's actually, that when you say it, it's a name.
It's a name. Like,
yeah.
I can't even think of one right now, but Darby.
And right, like, right. It could defense, it could be
whatever, whatever.
defense arsenal, like, you know, whatever.
Whatever it is. That would be weird. But I understand. That would be kind of like the way they did Jarvis for like Iron Man.
Yeah, exactly.
It means something. This is the one nitpick I will say I had with the movie is that there are moments, multiple moments, where they're just like just talking ad nauseum about the entity and what it's predicting and what it's going to do. And so it goes on a little long, these moments.
And then Gabriel, which is like a biblical name,
mm-hmm.
and he's supposed to be like a henchman for the entity.
Yeah.
Because he's also an anarchist, and the entity was like, perfect. He can be my vehicle.
Right, exactly.
So it's weird. It's weird.
It's weird. Is it the weirdest MacGuffin that we've seen in Mission Impossible? Probably.
Is it? I don't remember all the MacGuffins in every...
Because, like, part one, you have the knock list. Part two, I always...
But the knock list is easy to understand.
That one's easy. Then, part three, the rabbit's foot.
That's right. But you see, these names are great.
They are.
And then you get to Dead Reckoning. It's like, the entity.
That's true. You're right about
that.
Right. So, okay. So, outside of that... Then we get into, like, actual, like, stunts in the movie and things that happen in the movie. Their first major, like, set piece takes them to an airport in...
No, I actually love this sequence because Hayley Atwell is doing so much heavy lifting because it looks like she's having actual chemistry with Tom Cruise, who we've established is sexless. He's like a Ken doll. There's nothing. Okay. It's been well established that Tom Cruise is not, like, every co-star that he's had in the last 20 years has been doing the bulk of the chemistry.
And in this movie, he doesn't have one, not two, but three women just laying
who
it
are
on
just
thick.
What?
And you're just,
and he's
like,
not
I can't
giving
imagine
anything.
It. I can't imagine it.
He's not giving anything.
No.
Right? Like, it's just Ethan Hunt on a mission. And he might be amused here and there, but he's not necessarily serving it back to them.
No, definitely not. Even in the, like, I can take another movie, like Top Gun Maverick. Like,
uh-huh.
Jennifer Connelly is amazing in that movie. But again, she is heavy lifting.
Yeah.
For that. Because even when they're in a bed together, you're just like, nah, this doesn't work.
She's glowing and he's
just like, cool. Just laughing for no reason. So the sheer magnetism that the women bring in this series and in this movie, Hayley Atwell is fantastic from the moment that we meet her in the airport. Where she's a thief. She's not even like a spy or anything.
No, man. She's just a pickpocket.
Yeah. Who's been doing it for a very long time and she's gotten really good at it. And then Ethan, you know, spots her and is trying to help her, but at the same time needs the key. What'd you think of like the key mechanism?
The key looks very Vatican City.
Yes, it does. It really does.
Right. Like there's a lot of
pieces that interlock.
Yeah. It looks very, there's a lot of religious iconography, maybe.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
And the fact that, like, they kind of hint at, like, the idea of having an all-knowing thing.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Uh-huh.
Do you really have,
a new god.
Like, do you really have... a way of free will if the thing that's chasing you knows your every move, you know,
right,
like, type of thing. So yep. You know, little things like that,
little things. Are, you know,
yeah,
okay, maybe so, a little smarter than they let on at first.
Yeah, maybe a little bit smarter.
But I do like the sleight of hand that Ethan does and Grace, which is Hayley Atwell, they do. And that harkens back to like the first movie
with the disc,
right, where he's doing yeah, it's
where
great
he's doing the up close sleight of hand magic.
You mean this disc?
Exactly. So I like the callbacks. We got what's his character name? Now I'm blanking on it. He was in the first one.
Kittredge.
Yes, he was in the first one, and now he's back. Still, there's that icy relationship between those two.
I love him because he is super sus all the time.
All the time. You never know if you can trust him.
No.
You never
but
know.
But I love that about the character. And the way he does the line readings is great. It reminds me a lot of Hugo Weaving. Like an alternate Hugo Weaving is this guy Henry Czerny,
yeah,
who plays Kittredge. I love that guy.
Yeah, he's
where really has he good. Been?
Yes, he's been missing for a very long time. Hopefully he's back for the next one, for part two. I feel like he will be, based on how this movie ends.
Mm.
In the sequence right after that, we start getting new people. Obviously, we have Isai Morales as Gabriel, who enters the fray as a long time ago villain to Ethan that caused him to make the choice. We learned that Ethan was going to go to jail because of something that happened, and he was presented with the choice of, like, should you choose to accept this mission to mm-hmm. become part of the impossible mission force.
Right.
So we got a past. We got, like, some type of backstory. It's a little flimsy, but I don't mind too much.
I think it's very flimsy. I think I do mind.
Okay.
I think I do mind because Gabriel is not as strong a villain as, like, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
True.
Or Philip Seymour Hoffman. Or I just think and John Voight. I like, where do you leave out John Voight in the very first movie?
John Voight's a good one.
So we've had some sort of memorable villains, and I think he's really rather forgettable.
Mm. And we're going to get him again.
And maybe he's not as imposing as they want us to think he is.
Well,
like, I'm not threatened by Isai Morales over here.
No, I'm not. But I think I don't know if it's because this is a part one of two that maybe we haven't seen the full deck when it comes to him, or he is just a henchman who has grandiose ideas, and we're going to see in the second one that he's going to be taken down a peg, and we're going to see that he's not anything compared to the entity, you know?
I still think he's weak compared to other villains who've had a single movie to rise and shine,
mm-hmm.
and they meet the challenge.
Yeah. I agree. He's not a very formidable villain.
So, not my favorite villain.
No.
Shaky backstory.
Yes.
The retcon. All the things.
We, from Dubai, we hop and skip over to Italy, where Hayley Atwell is taken in by the police. And then, her lawyer's here. And who should it be? Ah, it's Ethan Hunt, speaking in Italian. And that's where they still have to get away from Shea Whigham's character. So here's the question I have. Shea Whigham, Briggs, right? He's chasing Tom Cruise's Ethan Hunt the entire movie. Why?
Okay, say that again. Briggs?
Yeah, Shea Whigham.
Shea Whigham.
Yeah.
Is chasing. Oh, he's okay. The Rock character.
Okay.
Like from Fast Five, The Rock is chasing.
Why
the crew.
Such a personal vendetta?
No, it's not personal. He's just like, it's a job. We have to bring him in. And
there's something. There was more. There was more to it. There was.
Where
more
are you reading this?
In the way he was obsessive compulsive about getting him. It
okay,
wasn't about.
What are we reading into for any other?
There must have been some type
character
of backstory
that's the same
there.
Setup.
No, but there must have been some type of backstory there.
No,
because
I don't
the way
see
he's
anything.
Obsessive. About
no.
getting Ethan. Not
I did not find it.
Not the team or
it's
anything.
It's just a job.
No, I think there was more to it.
Oh my God.
I think there was more to it. I really
no
do.
No way.
Yeah, man. I don't think it's just that he was a cop chasing him. I think there was more because. Okay. So here's a similarity.
He even says, like, why think about why we're chasing him? Why question it? It's just this is just an order. From up top, and it's best not to think about it. He has this whole conversation with Greg Tarzan Davis, where Tarzan Davis is like, don't you think that maybe Ethan has a point or is probably doing good and maybe he's been saving the world all this time and we're hindering him? And he's like, nah, it can't be that. It can't be that simple. It's so it's all there. I don't know where you're reading more into it.
Yeah, I'm reading more into it. I the the subtext of the movie just makes it seem like he's either jealous about something that from the past, or that he is.
There's certainly bravado there.
IMF thing that they get to play by their own rules, you know?
Right,
that,
because he's not. What is he? CIA?
Yeah, I think he's part CIA. Yeah.
Anyway.
So anyway,
I enjoyed Palm Clemente.
Yes.
I loved her character. I love that she's not talking in English the whole time. I'm a subtitles fiend. So anytime a character is just ditching the English, I'm like, yeah, more power to them. She was so good. She reminded me of Robert Shaw in From Russia with Love.
Oh.
She was that good of a henchman, like nice. Sub-villain.
Yeah, she was really good.
She was way better than Gabriel.
She was a better character than Gabriel. I agree. Much more, like, just when you see them on screen, they kind of just, like, take you away. Versus someone like Gabriel. Gabriel because doesn't really do much.
No. And then Paris is her character's name, Palm Clemente's character's name. She, you could tell she's, like, rageful and sort of unhinged.
Mm-hmm.
But she has a sense of morality because when Ethan Hunt spares her life, she's like, whoa, and it sort of shakes her foundations.
Yeah. By the way, that fight scene inside that tiny ass
in that narrow alley.
Yeah. Was really good.
Yeah.
That was a really good sequence there. Actually, like, these movies, and this one obviously is the same, like, they're built on the set pieces and you kind of tie them together with different things
right. to happen.
So we're in Italy. And we get this amazing car chase the streets of Rome. It, just wonderful stuff. Like, and
I love that cut, though, when they end up there because they're careening. They're going down this set of stairs and then the car stops finally and they look around and then the camera backs up and they're on the Spanish steps. And you're like, oh, those steps.
Those steps, which is... it's funny because, you know, we saw this movie about retconning a character from the past and we get an action sequence on the Spanish steps in Rome. And then, you know, we walked out of Fast X,
you know. Yeah.
So I didn't think I would see two movies within the span of 2 months do the same thing.
Mission Impossible that didn't exist. Dead Reckoning came before because then the big pinball from Fast X completely obliterated the Spanish steps.
Good point.
And there was a whole mess of explosions. They blew up Rome. The Vatican City's fine. Vin saved the Vatican City. But the destruction, the Man of Steel level destruction that happened in Fast X definitely came after this chase scene in Dead Reckoning because they're in the same universe. They have to be in the same universe.
So I really loved the sequence in that same car, in the yellow car where they're flipping and when they fall all the way to the bottom and when they get up like from the car, they're in the opposite seats somehow.
And she's like, no.
I just started laughing so hard. I love that she couldn't actually drive. That, you know, all this skill that she has.
She could drive. It was just not evasive driving.
No, definitely not. She couldn't drive evasively. Let's put it that way. So she was crashing into a lot of things. So I do like that they, you know, she is still a civilian. You know, she's very good at pickpockets and stealing and stuff, but not so good over here.
Yeah.
So I do appreciate that. So that entire chase sequence was a lot of fun. And that kind of carries us into where they finally lose each other because Hayley Atwell is able to take the handcuffs that were on each other and just tie it to the steering wheel of the car for Ethan to figure out a way to get out.
But Ethan in trains, like he can figure it out.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you put Ethan in some type of train situation, he's going to get it. He's going to figure it out.
He's going to figure it out.
So then the team gets reunited, this time with Ilse Faust.
Yes, because they faked out her death earlier in the movie. She's not dead. She's alive. She comes to his rescue because he had like said we're going to go dark. Nobody contact each other after the whole debacle at the airport.
Right.
And the team picks him up. Rebecca Ferguson's there. I think they were borrowing a lot from the first Mission Impossible movie, because when they go to the bridge where they meet Gabriel, mm-hmm. like the two ladies fight Gabriel at right. different points on the same bridge. That feels very much like the bridge. A lot of things happening on the bridge in Mission Impossible, the first movie.
Yes. I remember. There was a lot of things happening just in that entire corridor in Prague. But right. the bridge, yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you mean.
Anyway, Gabriel somehow gets the jump on Ilsa, and mm-hmm. Ilsa dies, quote unquote. Gets I don't stabbed think in she's the dead. Chest. I do not think she's dead.
You don't think so?
No. That is my my gut is telling me she's not dead. And I think you believed it. You believed what the story was saying. Oh, yeah, she's dead.
I still kind of do. Obviously, I wouldn't want her to be dead because she's such a great character.
It's literally just the fact that they moved on pretty fast. And there was no time to reflect. Because she's been in several movies now.
Yeah,
this
she
isn't
has.
Like this a is character her that third just movie. Right.
Yeah,
she was a major player. She was a quasi love interest for Tom Cruise's Ethan Hunt, and they were just like, "Okay, you're gonna take her spot, basically, Grace."
Right. Which I kind of. It sucks that we can't have more than one.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I feel like Rebecca Ferguson, this is not the last we've seen of her.
Okay. This isn't the last.
Okay. People are constantly assuming each other's identities good to point. No end in Mission Impossible movies. People, like, this wasn't a Carrie, what's her name? Like, Mission Impossible 3.
Oh, Carrie Russell.
This wasn't a Carrie Russell death to me. No. Where, like, the little bomb goes off in her head and, like, her eyes go different ways and she's, like, dead. Like, she comes in a body bag.
Yeah, you're right. It's not the same.
This was, like, she's just sort of quick, down and dirty. Mm. She was on the ground and I think she still had the knife in her chest.
Yeah, she did.
Okay, this is a good sign to me.
Good sign.
They always say if you get stabbed, do not remove whatever projectile is inside of you still.
Hmm.
Like, go to the hospital and they'll remove it, because otherwise you stand the risk of doing more damage pulling it out and bleeding to death after you pull it out. It could be like holding right. things together.
Okay. You're selling
so
me on this.
To me, I'm like, this is, I know she was there with her eyes open and it looked pretty bad, but again, you never see her after that. They don't even show her, like, even when Hayley Atwell is like, she gestures so that the body or maybe Rebecca Ferguson's character is lying prostrate in the room with them after, and they right. still don't show Ilsa.
Huh. Interesting.
Right? She's yeah. like, what about her? And she like gestures over.
Huh.
I'm like, this You're is so it. Giving me that she's not dead. Maybe
that
she's just
not dead.
Very injured and can't contribute to the group.
Okay.
And we found out earlier in the movie they already killed her off and faked it.
That's true. That is true. So they're just going to do it again?
They could just do it again, and then she's a wild card in part two.
Okay. So
did I sell you on it? Like, this is
you're doing a very good job of selling it.
All right.
You're
well,
doing a
anyway.
Very good job. Okay.
In the meantime, RIP Ilsa. Let's move
Ilsa
on
for now. So after Italy, this is where they present the choice to Hayley Atwell. Like, should you choose this mission?
Mm-hmm.
And she's very hesitant, but she says yes to Ethan. Because there's something about Ethan that he will always put his life of somebody else in front of his own. And she believes it. And we've seen it time and time again. He will always take... I'll never forget in Fallout when Alec Baldwin, when he was the CIA director and he moved over to IMF, he
right.
said, you made an impossible choice. You chose the life of one over a million. But that's what separates you. That's what makes you different. Because you do choose that life. So that's the thing about Ethan. He will always put the people around him in front of his own. So right. She joins the team. She joins the team for the mission. The mission is to... They have to verify the key.
It's so...
They have to verify this key. So she has to pretend to be the White Widow.
Vanessa Kirby. And I love this. Vanessa Kirby plays herself.
Yes, with brown eyes.
With brown eyes instead. It's good. I like this scene of her taking over and... possibly securing a back alley deal with Kittredge for Grace's, because she's pretending to be the White Widow. So she's like, I want Grace to have immunity and pay her off, basically protect her. And she makes another impossible choice, which was, I'm going to let go of my greed, because it seems like what I'm doing right now, giving over the key and, you know, just getting all this money in return, feels dirty. And she denies the transaction, steals the key back with some sleight of hand, and then we have a runaway train.
Exactly. We got a runaway train done by Isai Morales, who everybody's on the train pretty much. Carrie Elwes is there making a deal, but... backfires on him because you're the only one who knows where that submarine is, where the, you know, where the entity is.
They slit his throat.
And they slit his throat. And then he's about to kill Paris, Pomp Clemente, because he's like, the entity has foreseen that because Ethan lets you live, you're going to save him or help him. And so he tries to kill her. So this entity... the way it works, at least the way the movie's explaining it, it's taking the most probable thing that'll happen.
Right.
So, and for the most part, the things play out in the probabilities of like...
Right.
Pom, Clemente's character, does help out Ethan. It saves his life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the different things are happening here and there. They tell Ethan... the program, you know, they know it's going to understand if you get your hands on him, on Gabriel, if you kill him, it wins. And if he kills you, it wins. So either way, you got to find a way not to kill this man, no matter what he's done to you in the past.
Yeah, it's this convoluted thing, but basically it wants to not be found.
Right.
It doesn't want anybody to find this sub that has this vault thing inside of it. I don't even know. It's its brain, and it doesn't want people to destroy it. So if Gabriel dies, no one will ever know where this sub is.
Exactly.
And then the entity will win. So a nice way that Ving Rhames puts it, Luther kind of lays it out for Ethan. He's like, look, you got to get the key, get the fuck off that train, and do not kill Gabriel.
Exactly. So this is where we got a train sequence. We got a fight on top of the train, you know, call back to a little bit of Mission Impossible 1 train sequence type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's like almost 2.5 weeks in a row where we see like fighting on top of a train.
Oh, what, Indiana Jones. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then not only is it a runaway
train. Is it that easy?
What?
To fight on a train?
The way that these movies make it look,
there's no way. It seems very easy.
There's no way. Like, just standing on a train would be insane to do. Especially a high-speed one that's moving that fast.
Right.
So
we even had Bullet Train not that long ago.
That's true. That is true. There was fighting there, too. Okay, so at this point in the movie, Grace is on the train as Vanessa Kirby's character. Ethan is not on the train. Ethan was going to try to find a way on the train, but because the train is a runaway train.
Yeah, it's going too fast.
It's going too fast.
He misses it.
Right. So Simon Pegg's character guides him to a certain point of to a way to catch the train. And it's up a mountain and basically jump off the cliff. And even Ethan's like, you want me to do what? You've done it before.
It looks freezing. When he's on the bike talking to Simon Pegg's Benji.
Yes.
It looks cold.
Oh, it looks cold.
So, but he does it.
He does it. He does it.
And that's the famous scene that we've been seeing everywhere.
He jumps off the cliff with a motorcycle. And then you see a moment where the camera is like, can see his face as he's like paragliding down.
Uh-huh.
They strap the camera to him so that way you could see his face paragliding, you know?
Right.
Insane. Insane stuff.
I love that story. Did I send it to you? The TikTok of Matt Damon talking about, he was with Tom Cruise and he asked him about a stunt that happened. And Tom Cruise was like, he imitates people so well. Here's how it happened. And he tells him, I had this stunt planned in my head for like 10 years. So he finally talks to the safety officer, the safety guy. And the safety guy's like, we can't do that. And Tom Cruise goes, so I get a new safety guy. And I explain to him, this is who we're dealing with.
This is who we're dealing with. You don't say no.
No.
You just find a way.
You make it happen.
You make it happen with Tom Cruise. So he finds his way on the plane. He basically crashes through a window right in time to save Grace's character, who's about to be shot.
Yeah.
And so
classic gag.
Classic gag. And they're trying to stop the train. They can't. Then he finds his way on top of the train to fight Gabriel. They're fighting. And that's when the cops, or I'd like to call them the cops, but basically Briggs and Degas from the CIA, they have them put everything down. And, you know, Ethan's like, that's the man you have to arrest. And Gabriel jumps off the plane. Train. And right into a perfectly parked truck that was waiting for him right there.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So he gets away with the key. So you think. But who has the key at the end? Mr. Sleight of Hands himself.
Hey!
Ethan Hunt.
Yeah.
But this is where the last sequence happens. This is a big sequence. It's not only is it a runaway train, but now there's bombs on a bridge later on in that
sequence. Of course there are.
So they're going to run.
This feels like the cliffhanger in Fast X.
Yes.
Like verbatim.
It really does. Like, who was working on these two movies is just like, I have an idea. How about we blow up, you know, this part? And then they went like right over across the street. And it's like, I just had this idea. And so this was really cool. The way they shot the engine, the front, because they had cameras strapped to the sides of it. So when it's actually falling over the cliff, it's really falling over the cliff. So
I see.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was like the way they strapped the cameras on there and everything was really cool.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, it's a comedy of like running through the cars before they fall. So it's like Hayley Atwell and Tom Cruise just running through the different cars trying to get
through. Where have we seen this before? I want to say Jurassic Park 2.
Jurassic Park 2? You think
yeah.
so?
Yeah. The trailers, like the dinosaur pushes the trailers over the cliff.
Oh,
and then
yes.
Julianne Moore is there and you don't remember this?
Yeah. It's vaguely familiar. I haven't seen that.
But there has to be other movies that do this same thing where they have to move through the cars.
Right.
On a train. I don't know. It feels very familiar.
Right. Gotcha.
But anyway, I think I like the comedy of Hayley Atwell's character during all of these scenes.
Yes.
Versus the actual stunts that they're performing. Because she feels real? I don't know.
She does, because she's not like a trained spy or agent or anything. So she's like, you want me to do what? Like, just like all this impossible stuff.
And he's going to jump to another part of the train because the piano that's strapped to the ground is going to fall on them and kill them. And she keeps holding on to him. And she's like, no. He's like, I have to jump over there. I like it. I like her fear.
Right. Exactly.
Because everybody's fearless, okay?
Yeah, everybody, like, even Benji, who at the beginning of this series was like...
Right, was kind of an audience proxy because he was not, like, a grease man.
No, exactly. But now, like, even in, like, now at this point, he's just like, we do whatever it takes, you know?
Yeah.
You know, even he's unfazed. In Fallout, he's, like, trying to go into the action of, like, we got to stop this bomb. We got to find it. And, you know, he tries to go hand-to-hand with, I can't remember the name of the character, the bad guy from Rogue Nation and Fallout.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
I don't know.
Tries to go hand-to-hand, and it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, but so I do like that. It's a new face, a new audience surrogate.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Exactly.
So, at the end, Ethan jumps out of the train. He parachutes out.
Yep.
Grace stays on the train and talks to Kitteridge. He said, Ethan said that I could trust you and that you would present me a choice.
Uh-huh. So now she's on the payroll.
And now she's on the payroll. And so then they get away, and that's Benji and Ethan. They get away.
Okay, yeah.
Benji because Luther Luther kind of leaves from a certain point.
He, like, dips.
Because he has to track everything analog. He can't do anything digitally because of the interference from the entity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So everything has to be analog. So now... let's see how they work that into the next movie with this whole analog. We got to find a submarine now. Somewhere. Without using digital technology.
I'm just like looking around like.
I can't wait.
What else?
What else? Okay. So that's kind of where the movie wraps up. It kind of takes us to that point. Ethan has the key. And now the chase is going to be to find the submarine, the entity.
And kill it.
And kill it. And that's going to be Dead Reckoning Part 2.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, in this movie, we saw a lot of great scenes, sequences, stunts. Now, first, let me ask you this.
Okay.
What are some of your, like, memorable moments from past Mission Impossible movies? Moments that you're just like, you know what? That's a really good sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are some of your favorites?
Obviously, the Langley heist from the first Mission Impossible movie, where he's on wires and you get those iconic visuals of him, like, falling and he's near the floor, and it's great.
That's a great one. I like that one a lot.
Yeah.
That in Fallout, I really love the fight sequence inside the bathroom.
The bathroom fight.
We got one of the most iconic gifts in the world with Henry Cavill loading his arms to fight.
Cocking his arms. What?
That sequence is great. I really love the chase in Fallout as well in Paris.
Yeah, I like the mid-air plane hang.
Ooh, from Rogue Nation. Yes, that's a good one. That's a really good one. But I think my favorite sequence ever of any of the Mission Impossibles, it is the Burj Khalifa, the tower.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
He's climbing the damn tower for real. And he's climbing up. And I love the moment where he has to find a way back down. So the elevators, he can't go down the elevators. So what does he do? He throws a barrel to crack open the window, and he jumps out and he starts running down with a rope. He starts running down the building with the Mission Impossible theme right behind him. I love that sequence so much. It is so much fun.
Oh my gosh.
So how do you feel like the sequences in this movie kind of stack up to some of our favorites? Can they fit right in? Are they less?
I'm the wrong person to, because it all starts to blend together.
Mm. Gotcha.
I guess they fit.
I think that if I'm choosing one sequence from this movie to kind of be like the...
I don't know if they're that memorable.
Right.
In the grand scheme of things.
Right. They're not as memorable. if this was the first of a Mission Impossible, this would be like, oh shit, like all that stuff they did. But coming off of all these different movies where we're like seeing like so many crazy things, this one kind of, and only in the world of Mission Impossible, feels a little tame. A little bit. So, so not super high, but still very well done sequences. The chase scene was very cool in Rome. The fight choreography in different places was fun. The train sequence is really cool too. But again, we've had so many great stuff before it. So it's not quite there. We'll see what they do in Dead Reckoning Part 2. We'll see. So before we get out of here, do you have any other thoughts on the movie, on anything you want to say that maybe we might have missed out on?
No.
No, you're good?
I think we hit it all.
I think so, too. I'm really excited about this movie. Something we didn't do is, what did we give the grade as a movie? We forgot to do that. So what did you give it as a grade?
I gave it a B.
A B?
Yeah.
Gotcha. I settled with an A minus.
Yeah, this was, I would not expect anything less than an A from you. Yeah.
That is true. That is true. In terms of where it fits in my own personal Mission Impossible rankings.
Oh, of course you
currently
have
currently, I think I have a third.
Third. What are your top two?
Number one's Fallout. Easily.
You're such a Fallout bitch.
I love Fallout. It's my favorite movie of 2018. I'm not even like joking.
I remember.
Yeah.
And all right, what's two?
Number two is Rogue Nation.
Oh, wow.
The introduction of Ilsa Faust. You have the airplane sequence. You have some really good stuff in that movie.
Well,
above Ghost Protocol.
The Mission Impossible franchise the same as the Fast franchise, and it all starts to blend together.
They are not the same.
It all blends together. It's all discombobulated, and it's like, why I don't know what my favorite Mission Impossible is. Maybe the first one. I love the first one.
There's nothing wrong with that.
It's easy. It's accessible. But it's really freaking cool at the same time.
It really is. It really is. That's a
Mission Impossible 3. I love 3 with Philip Seymour Hoffman.
He's probably the best villain.
That scene of them interrogating Philip Seymour Hoffman with the open plane.
Oh,
yes. They hang him out the plane.
Yes.
And I think Ving is the one that, or Luther is the one that says, Ethan, no, like, stop, enough. Yep. And then they pull him back in, and Philip Seymour Hoffman goes, your name's Ethan. And it's like, oh, shit, because now
exactly
the element of anonymity is out the window. And he finds the wife, and he's like, I'm going to... The when he threatens the wife, too. Oh, my gosh. Ugh. It's so good.
I'm going to hurt her. Oh, man.
Oh, so good.
It's so good. It's unassailable. Philip Seymour Hoffman. Rest in peace, man.
He was cooking. Game.
All right, so that is the end of our thoughts on Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part 1. Thank you for checking us out. If this is your first time listening, thank you once again. Go ahead and hit subscribe on your favorite podcast app. We're on all of them, so just look for us, Always the Critic Podcast. If you already follow us, make sure you're following us on socials, at Always Critic Pod. We're on all of them. Not Threads yet, but everything else we are. And then if you really want to support us, check out patreon.com/alwayscriticpod. And for less than $2, for as little as $2, I would say, you can support our show for less than a cup of coffee. So check us out there. This upcoming week, I'm really excited. Next week's a big one.
Yeah.
Not one, two movies. Barbenheimer.
Whoa.
Yes, it's gonna be a big one.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's gonna be wild. So check out that episode next week. Until then, this has been our episode. I'm Rico.
And I'm Jessica, and this has been the Always the Critic Podcast.